heading, Family Gossip. Worth checking for accuracy, by the way.
Okay.
The first major problem which led to litigation was that Fred had set up a trust for his various children. And he made, as trustees of that trust, himself and his, I believe it was Joan's mother, Catherine. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether that's right. That can be checked.
Mm-hmm.
In the California case law, case records. And Fred used that, used some of the money from that for political purposes, such as supporting some purpose, not directly for the benefit of the beneficiary that was Fred. So Fred filed action. He hired himself some attorneys and filed action against Fred and Catherine for a breach of trust and the bank. And he won because Fred had considered it was still his money and that he could do what he wished with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he had boxed himself in,
mm-hmm,
as far as the law is concerned. And for that mistake, he paid.
Mm-hmm.
And from that time on, at every meeting of the ranch company which had been formed and of which Fred was an integral part, he appeared with a reporter and attorneys. And he filed actions whenever he could, or his attorneys could file, they filed further actions,
mm-hmm,
which you can look up if you care to. Personally, he proclaimed that he was Fred H. Bixby, Jr., to identify himself. And he associated with the people to whom, generally speaking, one would consider, not philosophically, but actually as scum,
mm-hmm,
crooks, or whatever you call it. In other words, socially undesirable in the present state of civilization,
mm-hmm,
and made it public. That included drugs, liquor, sex, everything you can think of. Any way he could find, and he was not unintelligent at all, that would humiliate or embarrass his family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that isn't a tragic situation,
yeah,
I never heard of one. And it's as I say, if you want to make this public or anything like that, you'd better check on all of it.
Well, I had no real intention of making it public. This becomes part of the archive. I was just, that is the contrast then, the way young Fred was raised is with his sisters, because certainly Catherine and sister and Deborah went out with their father and they roped cattle and they
precisely
did all those things.
Fred's mistake was not picking on one of them to be the rancher. And as a matter of fact, sister,
mm-hmm,
she became the rancher and a very and she's led a, well, I don't know, she's led a tragic life, I guess. I'm not crying for many reasons other than dumb eyes.
My associate has gone up and interviewed
you,
Janeway.
Yeah, yeah, no.
She has not.
No, she's had a tough life, really, very tough.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that, I don't know, people seem to have a death wish or something. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You're here just one time, and why not enjoy it when you can, the best you can?
Well, I've heard stories about how he really got so upset when the government would condemn some of his land, when they took some of the land for the Navy hospital, some of his best land, and then there was that he even gave the land, sold the land for the university,
mm-hmm,
because the story I heard was that he was afraid that the federal government was going to take that land and maybe put in a cemetery or something and take him to the hospital.
Well, the government took the from the Bixby Land Company the a lot of land down around Huntington Beach or down there. It's all built up now and it's very, very valuable. And the Bixby Company did save out of it the mineral rights, and there's a court case on that if you want to look into it, which has provided the family with a modest income, nothing huge about it at all, but young Llewellyn, that is my cousin Llewellyn, old Llewellyn now, was well advised by his local attorneys there. So when the condemnation was made, the court permitted the company to reserve the mineral rights because the government merely wished to use the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe Mr. DeMille was involved again. I'm not sure. Whoever it was advised my cousin and the board to distribute that to the shareholders, which the and that's before any exploration had been made at all,
mm-hmm.
which was done, and the transfer to the, from the corporation to the individuals involved no tax or anything like that. The way distributing $1 million would have been taxable to everybody, and again I say luck comes into it. That turned out to be productive, so that everything is relative. An income was then paid and still continues to pay to each individual. I don't know what the point in all this is, I'm telling you, but you're just talking about Fred, and that's where luck comes in. And by the way, the Alamitos Land Company is the lucky one about oil. The Bixby Land Company was the unlucky one about the oil, except for this one small incident, and it's very small, extremely mm-hmm. small, compared with any of the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a joke amongst us that the Alamitos is the one that gets the easy life, and we have to work to get ours. There again, you're getting on the personal side. Too bad. I can't help it. Go ahead.
Were you ever involved then with the Fred Bixby Company or the Bixby Ranch Company?
No.
So the companies that you have served on the board have been the Alamitos Company and the Bixby Ranch Company?
I've served on the companies in which, yes, that is correct, yeah. The branches of the family come down and they meet all three, from the three, sons-in-law
mm-hmm.
of old Parson Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong, very wrong. Strike all this mess out. Put it this way. The Alamitos Land Company divided into three parts. One part is the family of Mr. Hellman, who was mm-hmm. a business associate of the Bixby's in the early days. One part is to the descendants, a third is to the descendants of John Bixby, of whom Fred Bixby mm-hmm. and his descendants and his sister Susan.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Bryant, Hardison, and one third into the descendants of Llewellyn and Joseph Bixby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which leaves me with 1/90.
Well, I have a question that I'm going to ask Mr. Bixby when I talk to him again. And I'm just curious as to how these boards of directors function, the Alameda Land Company and Bixby Land Company. Was policy made by the president of the company? How did it function? Is that a silly question?
No, it's not. It's a very wise question. I'll say, let me start off with a contrast first. I told you how the ranch company works. That's the Fred's.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know for sure, but I understand. It's hearsay, and you should check that when Fred died, he left his property in trust to two, I don't know whether they're attorneys or not, but I understand they still attend with reporters and a stenographer. I'm not sure.
No.
No, but you can check on it.
Yes.
I'm not sure about it. On the other hand, the Alameda Land Company and the Bixby Land Company have never, as long as I've been on, had any real division of opinion. They work harmoniously.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pleasure, a great pleasure, which I treasure, to associate with the members of my family in that harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is, the Bixby Land Company is practically all family. As I said, the other one is one-third Hellman.
Mm-hmm.
But that also operates with great harmony. And the only thing I can attribute it to, putting it as you say it down in the street corner, is that I hope we have enough sense to treat other people fairly and don't let greed overcome us.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get right down to bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I love money just as much as anybody else, and strike it and jump from a 5-story window after a nickel on the pavement, strike that too. At least have enough sense to know that we're just leaving moralizing aside, that you get along a lot better with people if you treat them decently and respect them.
Mm-hmm.
As the old saying is, it's better to live in peace before you rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I don't. In other words, we offer a fair deal and expect a fair deal and go out of our way to give it in both companies.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, it pays off.
Well, Barry Neighbors told me that they had prepared a plaque for you in honor of your 40 years on the board.
Oh, hell yeah. So that's just ego stuff as well. If you get me in the philosophical vein, you think I'm crazy, really. I mean it.
Well, in your mother's writings, she talks continually about visiting the different ranches.
Yes.
For holidays and all.
Mm-hmm.
Did that continue as you were growing up? Of course, you were living in so many different places, but did you and your siblings, brothers and sisters, did you also visit Alameda from Cerritos for special events, holidays?
I recall that when we were living in Claremont, it seemed to me that, you can check this with Llewellyn down in line, that we got together for Christmas and or Thanksgiving. I think mostly Thanksgiving, but as far as that, my memory's not too good on these. I don't think we ever, I can't recall. Now, Fred used to have an annual meeting at his ranch in the summer, I believe. And it wasn't strictly family. In other words, he It's a sort of a PR business deal, I think, mm-hmm. as much as anything. Because he had large crowds of people, and he had a nice party, and they all came and had a barbecue and drank all the beer or wine that they wanted and just had a nice time, enjoyable time. The gatherings which were a little more a family deal are the ones which were held up at my cousin Teddy says Theodore Chamberlain Jr., who died in Los Olivos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was held by chiefly the Bixby Land Company up there. They were about once every 4 or 5 years, and they were very nice things to attend. We held a meeting up there, the board of directors and shareholders. And spent a day, and we had spent maybe 2 or 3 nights up there in Los Olivos and the neighboring towns in the motels. Just a general get together, mm-hmm. which I treasure those very much. And there you go, you run into a little more semi tragedy, which, see, I think Willie and his wife are getting divorced. And she's moved into Santa Barbara, I believe, because she's a city girl. And he's a true rancher, and he loves it, and he's good at it, and he's just on the ranch. But it makes it extremely difficult for him we had planned one for last year, this year, but it's narrowed. We can't put any pressure on him. And which reminds me, I'll just spout on, you say, let ideas catch on. My cousin Theodore Chamberlain is a very, one of the most, my I think I know him better than almost any of the others, actually. Mm-hmm. I first met him when my Aunt Martha took me to, I won't say it's the first time I met him, the first time I got to know him, when my Aunt Martha took me to Concord, Massachusetts for a year when I took my dancing lessons. Well, Teddy was a little bit younger than I, and we used to, in the wintertime, we got together and built igloos in his yard. They had a plot of ground about 2 lots wide and couple of lots deep with a little brook running behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I trapped muskrats in the little brook. Did a little bit of canoeing on the Concord River and built igloos out of snow. We'd make a pile of snow, maybe 5 or 6 feet high, and pat it down and sprinkle it with water, and that would freeze, and then we'd cut a hole and hollow it out and put a couple of cans inside like children do, you know, like fort or igloo.
Mm-hmm.
And he, when he was in grammar school, he won a prize for raising the best not spinach. Does broccoli have a big leaf?
A Swiss chard, maybe?
Yeah, I think. But some large.
Yeah.
He got a prize for raising the best of that. And they asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up. He didn't say, I want to be president. I don't want to be a fireman. I don't want to run the railroad train or the motor car. He said, I want to be a farmer.
Harmer.
H-A-R-M-E-R. Farmer, he meant.
Oh.
And there's a man who was, I think, was a square peg in a square hole. Something guided him. He barely got through. He got through grammar school. He barely squeezed through high school. I'm going to say something good about Fred Bixby now. He came out west on his own choice. His parents sent him out here. And Fred Bixby took him under his wing.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred Bixby made an A1 farmer out of Teddy. And Ted, on his own, with no college education, but high intelligence, he was a member of the school board in the valleys. I don't know, up there, the valley he's in, where Los Olivos is. He borrowed some money from his parents to buy some land up there. And he acquired eventually about 12,000 acres, which his family, now own up there. And my uncle, well, I can tell you about Uncle Theodore, too. I'll let it run. Somewhere down the line, Uncle Theodore decided it would be a good plan. Uncle Theodore loved money. He decided it would be a good plan for Teddy to sell the ranch up there. And take the profit. And Teddy, an individual, said no.
Mm-hmm.
And he hung on to it. He eventually paid his debt to his family, and he has passed on to his children now as nice a ranch as you could ever wish to have, with a couple of small wells on it.
I mean,
nothing great, but enough so that it at least carries the overhead.
Mm-hmm.
Ted also had a position with the state at the state fair. He was head of the livestock show and stuff like that. In other words, he was a busy, active man, and I liked him. He and I were very, very close together. I don't mean we were palsy, wowsy, and we didn't visit. I'm an unsociable person, actually. I like to enjoy very much sitting here and gassing to you and listening to myself, a little ego involved. But I always felt that he was one of the fortunate ones in the family,
mm-hmm.
because he did what he was fitted to do, what he had always wanted to do, be part of nature, just be himself,
mm-hmm.
without any fancy flourishes or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I considered him as one of the nicest ones in the group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which gets me back to Uncle Theodore, which amuses me because of his, I think, imbalance, again a judgment of mine, an imbalance between how to live and how not to live. He was so bitter about, talking about Fred being afraid of having his land taken. My Uncle Theodore was so bitter about it, anybody taking anything he had, that he gave all ALL he had to Harvard Medical School when he died. And I think the day he died, my auntie Nan hired a gardener, because he had refused to hire a gardener for her or permit one on the place because she could get out and she loved flowers. She loved to raise them. She had never had a gardener until he died, and I think the very next day she hired a gardener. Now, to me, it's one very, very amusing, but very, very sad.
Was he affiliated with Harvard? What was his
occupation? Yeah, he was a doctor.
Oh.
I can tell you how he met Auntie Nan, if that's
mm-hmm.
of interest
sure.
to you. Auntie, you notice? I bet you Auntie,
yes.
East of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you some other things about her, too. I used to tell stories to children at the Thanksgiving thing. They used to test her around. Now I've got a child before me. Tell some more fairy stories. which was the one I was about to tell you? Can you play that?
How they met.
Yeah. Well, she was headed for Wellesley as a young woman. I don't know whether they... I think the railroads ran clear across the country by that time, but not... Yeah, sure it was. The Union Pacific and the others had met and hammered the Gold Spike. She went back there, and when she got to Boston, she was very, very ill.
Yes, her mother mentions that in the book.
Extremely ill. They thought she was a goner.
Uh-huh.
Well, here's a young medic, fresh out of Harvard Law, you know, bright young man and all that, and he saved her life. And at the same time, he found out that the family out here would pay anything to anything she needed. And he confided to me once, it's just as easy to love a rich woman as a poor one. Well, you could love without regard to the material matters. Excuse me. This is supposed to be a serious interview, wasn't it? You're paying me by laughing. Well, at any rate, it worked out. And another thing was that Teddy told me that it was Uncle Theodore's desire to have 4 male children. And he kept trying. All he could produce were 2 boys and 7 girls or something like that. Or 5. That's it. They're listening. And I get that from Teddy. Because Teddy was a child and they ignored children. They apparently thought children didn't have brains. And he heard them talking. And the tragic part of that was that every child cost my Auntie Nan won something of her hearing. And the last one, she was totally stone deaf. It's a horrible story, really. But that's the way it was.
From what you say, then, it is very nice that your cousin Teddy was able to find exactly what he wanted to do.
Absolutely.
And be a happy man.
Absolutely. No, that's the only secret to life. That if you can't do what you like to do, you might as well go blow your brains out.
Well, then why did you choose to go into law?
Found out when I tell the truth, people say, "Wait a minute, I better go." I became a lawyer.
Yes.
Well, if you want to believe me, you can, or you can think I'm telling you a story, because I find that. Actually, many times when I tell the truth, people think I'm lying, and when I lie, they believe me. Maybe that's why I'm was a successful lawyer. I don't know. And again, the ego talks when we shove that word successful in, you see. No, it took me from 1915 to 1929 to get my formal education. In between, I was in the Navy, and then I went to sea for a couple of years and have an able-bodied seaman certificate, and I was a tenant day laborer, skilled and semi-skilled. I worked in the oil fields, and in other words, I was what the Germans call a Wanderjahres, wandering around finding. I damn near starved to death in the process, but I came through, and found out that life I could compete on the physical basis, and then on the mental basis, I found out later on I could at least compete as an equal. And after going through that, see, when I entered law school, I was 25, I was 27 years old. At that time, I was living in Claremont. I was at home at one of these. I'd come home after these little adventures here and there over the world and whatnot. And my mother said to me one day, she said, "Maxim, don't you think it's time you settle down?" And I said, "Yes, I think it is. What do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. Maybe I'd like to be a lawyer." She wanted to know why, and I said, "Well, I tell you, Dale Healy went back. Dale Healy was a boy I grew up.